Okay, good morning, everybody. It is Thursday morning, November 12th, 8 o'clock. And I noticed that something is wrong with my volume, so I'm going to check. Give me 1 second. Interesting. Okay. It said my volume was playing through my speakers as opposed to through my headset the way that it's supposed to. And I can tell that it's still doing it. Let me check. You guys hearing me okay? Because it's not doing what it's supposed to do. I'm going to flip my speakers around a couple of times and see if I can get the speakers to play through the way they're supposed to. Okay, I think I can hear better now. Let's try that and see how that works. All right. So what we're doing this morning is the Electrolyte Lab. And this is, I believe, activity 19. Let me start a screen share. I'll show you where this activity is located. Stop the share. And share via iPad. Okay, so what we're doing is activity 19. So you can see I've got activity 19 highlighted there. And activity 19 on the canvas is partially filled out for you. So Krista went in and did a couple of filled out a couple of things, components for the actual experiment. We're going to talk about those and I'll fill them in as we go through and do that. And I'm going to post one that is a little bit darker in its in the way in which it's filled in so that you can read it a little bit better. And this lab is all about electrolytes. And so we sort of need to define what an electrolyte is, and then we'll talk about how this experiment is done. And let's go ahead and do that. So an electrolyte, what is an electrolytic solution? First off, an electrolytic solution is a solution which conducts electricity. And it conducts electricity by having dissolved ions within the solution. So a solution which conducts electricity by having dissolved ions, both cations, which are positive, and anions, which are negative. And the way in which it does that is that if we think about a solution and we have a couple of electrodes that are in that solution, so we have one electrode which is the positive electrode and one electrode which is the negative electrode, then what we find is that electrons, or anions, we can say, that an anion in solution is drawn towards the positively charged electrode. And so they flow this direction. And cations, which are positively charged, flow towards the anode. And it's the movement of the cations and the anions in solution. So if we just take and we throw a bunch of anions and cations in solution, then it's the movement of all of these that as they move into the different locations that causes electrons to flow in solution. And it's the movement of the ions which allows the solution to actually be conductive. Okay, so then that's an electrolytic solution, a solution which contains ions and conducts electricity. An electrolyte is a compound that, when dissolved in aqueous solution, produces ions or dissociates into ions. So the other way that we can say that is it dissociates. And so there's two different types. And out of those two types, we have things which are ionic in nature. And so those are our ionic compounds. And the other type is molecular acids. The bases sort of fit into the ionic compounds because the bases will always have a metal cation associated with them. But the molecular acids are different in that they're molecular. They have no metals in with them. So they look like covalent compounds, but because of their nature of them being acids, they will dissociate when we put them into aqueous solution. And we can show examples of both of these. So I had a little experiment that I was going to show you. I'm going to move this experiment down yet. We'll come back to that. And let's do a couple of examples here. So in terms of examples, we can have sodium chloride that is a solid that, when placed into water, dissociates into sodium ions and chloride ions. And this would produce a strongly electrolytic solution. We can have acids such as HCl. And in this case, what we'll do, HCl is actually a gas. So we'll write it that way. And this one, we will add plus water, because the water is actually part of the dissociating process in that it forms hydronium, H3O plus, which is now aqueous in the water. Plus, it also forms the chloride minus. And so this would be type A, an ionic compound, and type B, a molecular acid. We can see other acids. Let me try one more example of an acid, HC2H3O2. This is acetic acid, which is a liquid. If we take that acetic acid and we mix it with water, we likewise get dissociation into H3O plus, and the acetate anion, C2H3O2 minus. And I suppose we can say that we could put liquid over the arrow, and we could put liquid over the arrow here too, just to say that because water's not showing up on the right-hand side, the aqueous component, that's coming from the water that is forming these solutions. And that's why they're written as aqueous as they dissociate. So the fact that they're forming ions, cations and anions, is what turns these into electrolytic solutions. Okay, so how do we test an electrolytic solution? Testing an electrolytic solution, we use a testing device. The device looks like a light bulb. Actually, it is a light bulb. And what we do is we take the test compounds, whatever it is we're interested in testing, in test tubes, and the test tube then we take and we place it. Oh, I grabbed the electrode there too. We just take that test tube and slide the electrodes up into the solution. And then we look to see whether or not the light comes on. And if the light comes on and the light shines brightly, when the test solution is there, once this thing is plugged into the wall, then we know that the solution is an electrolytic solution, because electrons are then flowing from the cation, the cathode, to the anode, and that completes the circuit. And once you complete the circuit, then the light lights up. And this would then be an electrolytic solution. Now, as you might guess, this is not a very safe experiment to conduct, because you're plugging this light bulb, which is a standard 60 watt light bulb, and it's plugged into the wall socket. And as we plug this thing into the wall socket, there's 110 volts that are running through the solution and making the light bulb light up if the solution is conductive. And sometimes when you touch the solution to it, particularly if it's a strongly electrolytic solution, you'll get a spark, an initial spark that'll jump between the electrodes. And so using that high a voltage to test for an electrolytic solution is dangerous. And we don't generally let students do that, because if you were to accidentally brush up against the electrodes while the solution is not there, you would get a severe shock from this device. And so there's two other ways in which we conduct this experiment or do this experiment. One of them is to take the one that we normally have you guys do, is to take a little computer, what we call a breadboard. And the computer breadboard has a 9-volt battery, which is stuck onto it. And the 9-volt battery has a little cap. So we got the two little plugs of the 9-volt battery. These guys hook down onto wires, and then there is a little LED light. And the LED light is hooked down to that board, and there are two wires that project from it. And then what we do is we take that 9-volt battery and we use this as a tester to test droplets on the reaction surface. So we take the reaction surface and we just put a drop down on the reaction surface, just like we would for small scale chemistry. And then we take the 9-volt battery and we just touch the electrodes to the drop, and we look to see, does the light actually light up when we touch it to the drop or not? And if the light lights up bright, then we call it a strong electrolyte. If the light lights up dim, we call it a weak electrolyte. And if the light doesn't light up at all, it's a non-electrolyte. So the outcomes, outcomes. Bright LED. This equals strong electrolyte. A dim LED equals a weak electrolyte. And no LED, no light, this is a non-electrolyte. Okay, so we need to define then, real quick, what a strong electrolyte is, what a weak electrolyte is, and what a non-electrolyte is. So let's just define those terms real quick so that we know what they are. Strong electrolyte. A strong electrolyte is a compound which dissolves entirely to produce many ions in solution, usually an ionic compound. It's either an ionic compound or molecular acid. That dissociates completely to produce many ions in solution. And so examples of these would be things that have cations or anions that are always soluble. These were our sodium cations, group 1A. I should just say group 1A. And ammonium. So these are our sodium, potassium, lithium, and our NH4 ammonium. The other thing is that it could be anions. It can be our always soluble anions. Our always soluble anions were nitrate and acetate. So those are our always soluble anions. And the other thing it can be is it can be a strong acid. These are things like HCl, H2SO4, HNO3. Those were our strong acids. So those are all the things that are going to fall under strong electrolytes. And this experiment was to test that, and we are. We're going to test it, and we're going to go through. But I want to be clear what a strong electrolyte looks like and what a strong electrolyte is doing. And that is that it dissociates entirely. And so the way that we write the equation for these would be something like, well, we did this one before, but I'm going to reiterate NaCl solid dissolving in water with a one-way arrow representing sodium cations and chloride anions. And it is the arrow representation which is critical. The one-way arrow, that's too big a highlighter. The one-way arrow is telling me that when this thing dissociates, it dissociates in such a way that the equilibrium is that all of the material is on the ionic side and almost no material is on the molecular side. And that's what we mean by that one-way arrow. Okay, the same thing for the acids, that when I look at an acid and I look at HCl dissociating, HCl is dissociating using a one-way arrow to produce hydronium. And chloride ion. And in using that one-way arrow, we're saying that the equilibrium lies far to the right-hand side. And that there's only a little bit of tiny material that is left over on the molecular side. That's our strong electrolyte. Let's look at a weak electrolyte real quick. A weak electrolyte produces some ions. So these are things that are slightly soluble. Slightly soluble salts. And weak acids and bases. So what do we mean by this? Let's take a salt that is got some sparing solubility. So one of the salts that would generally be not soluble, we can think about something like the calcium chloride, or I'm trying to think about the exceptions. Let's go with lead, because that's an easier one to do. Pb2 plus Cl. Solid. We would think that lead chloride is generally not soluble within water, but in small amounts, it is soluble to a small degree in water. What we do is we put this into water, and what we see is we get not a single arrow, but an equilibrium arrow, where I get some amount of lead going into solution and some amount of chloride, but I can't represent the amount of lead and chloride on the right-hand side by an amount. What I do is I represent it with the arrow. And so it is the equilibrium arrow that is telling me, let's do it in blue, that this is a reversible reaction. And when I use that arrow, I generally use that arrow to say that I'm getting the material on the molecular side as the major amount, and that on the ionic side, I'm only getting a tiny bit. That's what that implies. And so this is a solution that produces few ions in solution. And producing those few ions, it wouldn't conduct electricity very well. Now, I said weak acids. Weak acids also fall into this category. Things like HC2H3O2, which is acetic acid, and acetic acid here is a liquid plus water, equilibrium arrow, goes to form H3O plus, which is aqueous, and acetate anion C2H3O2 minus. And again, in this one, what we find is that because of the equilibrium arrow, if we were to draw the equilibrium and show this, that we would be mostly on the molecular side. We would have just a little tiny bit on the ionic side. Most of the material is going to reside on the molecular side. Where there are no ions. And so we get few ions in solution. The other example of this is a weak base, and there are several different types of weak bases. One type of weak base is NH3, ammonia, that when added to water produces the ammonium ion, NH4+, and hydroxide anion. And remember that anything that produces hydroxide anion in solution is a base. And so this would be a liquid plus a liquid. And again, because of our equilibrium and the equilibrium arrows, we find that this is mostly on the molecular side and would be a weak electrolyte. Now, how do we know which of these categories it falls into? Just by looking at the formula, because the formulas don't appear to be telling us. So the way that we know is by the outcomes of the LED. So what we're expecting here is that when we look at the LED, if we're thinking about this in sort of our test mode, and we have that LED that's got the little light in it, that we expect that this light is going to be very bright. And we'll, by bright, we'll just have it lit up. And this one down here, these lights are bright. And so it's the light which is indicating to us if it's a strong electrolyte or a weak electrolyte. Then with these guys with weak electrolytes down here, what happens is when we use that light and we test it, we get a dim light. So I've got to figure out how to cut this back a little bit. And what we'll do is we'll just do a little bit of light coming out of this. But we get some light coming out. It's just dim because it's not conducting as much. And that will indicate to us that when we test these solutions, that these solutions do not have very many ions in them. Trying to find a place to put that one. There, that's not so bad. Okay, and then we have non-electrolytes. So let's see what a non-electrolyte looks like. A non-electrolyte produces no ions when it dissolves in solution. These are things that dissolve molecularly, that dissolve for other reasons. So examples of these types of things are CH3, CH2OH. This is ethanol and alcohol. Ethanol is a liquid that when placed into water, it dissolves. But it dissolves, and it dissolves entirely. But it dissolves and stays CH3, CH2OH. It just now becomes aqueous. It does not dissociate. There's no dissociation. And in fact, because water is not really involved in that, we should just take the water and put the water over the arrow as a better representation of what's going on in the solution. Because there is no dissociation and water doesn't play a part in the way that it plays a part in dissolving or reacting with acids. So what does that actually look like in solution then? Well, what it looks like is the ethanol in its Lewis structure has lone pairs on the oxygen and hydrogens on the carbons. And this thing associates with water molecules by hydrogen bonding. And it can hydrogen bond to the oxygen of a water molecule by the one hydrogen that is attached to the oxygen. And that's because of its partial positive that resides on that one. These, by the way, that are out here attached to the carbons cannot hydrogen bond. And so the way that this dissolves is it dissolves through hydrogen bonding. And does not dissociate. And so these types of materials, even though they're demonstrating a one-way arrow, as they demonstrate a one-way arrow, it's true that these things in their equilibrium are going all the way to the right-hand side, but this is still molecular. And so while it dissolves completely, what we find is that when we look at the LED, there's no light. And so that indicates to us that this is a non-electrolyte. Now, our job is to test a whole bunch of compounds and to figure out which of those compounds are electrolytes, weak and strong, and which ones are not electrolytes, and then to place them into groups and to answer some questions. That's our entire experiment. So let's go get that experiment. Let's bring it into our lab here and let's go through the data. Okay, so first off, there are two different categories of materials. There are compounds for part A, and there are compounds for part B. And these are two separate lists. And we want to be careful of these two separate lists, because they're going to ask us about the differences in these two lists. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take each one of these, and I'm going to get it up on the screen so that I can see it. And we're going to test them with the tester and then look to see whether or not they are strong, whether we get a bright, dim, or non-light showing up. So I've got the list up. The first one is calcium chloride, and I'm going to do them by formula for you. So calcium chloride, CaCl2. Actually, let's do it by both. And I might need to switch to a smaller pin setting and zoom in a little bit. Let's do it that way. So calcium chloride, CaCl2. The next one is sodium hydrogen sulfate. It's going to be NaHSO4. Then we've got sodium hydroxide. NaOH. Sodium phosphate. That's Na3PO4, copper 2 sulfate, remember that the Roman numeral is the charge state on the copper, So that is the copper two sulfate, zinc chloride, zinc chloride. Zinc is a 2+, so that's going to be ZnCl2. Sodium carbonate. Sodium carbonate is Na2CO3. Sodium hydrogen carbonate. Now this is where we have an NaHCO3 and then iron 3 chloride. This is FeCl3 and aluminum chloride. This is AlCl3. Okay, these are all, what do we call them? A, group A? These are all group A materials. Okay, and then in group B, we've got a set of compounds here. In group B, we've got hydrogen peroxide. This is H2O2. We've got hydrochloric acid. That's HCl. We've got ethanol. That's the alcohol that we drink. That is CH3CH2OH. That is the best way to represent that. We have methanol. Methanol is called wood alcohol, CH3OH, causes blindness and liver failure, cannot drink methanol. 2-propanol. Propanol, also called rubbing alcohol. So oftentimes people will have that in their cabinet to use when you have a fever, to rub on your body to cool the body down, also to sterilize different instruments or things. Like if you have a thermometer that you've used on somebody who's sick, you can use some rubbing alcohol on that to sterilize that thermometer. So 2-propanol. And 2-propanol has a formula which is a little bit harder to draw. I'm going to draw it in its Lewis structure, or a sort of CH3, and then there is an OH, and I got into, see if we can put it here, and then an OH that is on the middle carbon, and then the last one is ammonia. Ammonia is NH3. And I don't think I missed anything. I'm looking back in the list. I think I just have more test spots than I had compounds. Hydrogen peroxide, ethanol, sodium carbonate. Yeah, I think I got everything. Okay. And so these compounds then down here, these are group B materials. And so group B materials start at the hydrogen peroxide. And the group A materials go all the way from calcium down to the aluminum. Okay, so now we can clearly see what our group A materials are and what our group B materials are. Now, in terms of the lights and how things work, Krista had done the experiment already. And I'm going to go with Krista's data. So I'm going to pull back. Let me go grab it real quick because I don't have it in front of me here. One second. We're in module 7. Nope, excuse me, module 8. Activity 19. And now I've got it. Okay, so the calcium chloride. First off, when we test these things, they ask us to test them in two different ways. Appearance of detector when the solution is tested, and appearance of detector when the dry residue is tested. This is without any water. So this one over here, this is without water. And this one is in solution. Well, you can imagine that if you test these without water, that when they're in their solid form, they're stuck in their crystal structure. And none of these, the ions cannot move when they're stuck in their crystal structure. And that even though they are ionic compounds, they are non-conductive when they're in their crystal structure. And so what we see for all of these is we see none. And by none, I mean we see no light. So this part of the experiment here, this is true for all the compounds all the way down, that the light does not light up for either the group B materials or the group A materials when they are in their dry form or when they're in their pure aqueous or pure liquid form like ethanol and methanol, they still do not conduct electricity because there's no water and no ion ability to move. Okay, now we go through and we do the rest of the data here. So bright or dim, what we get is, let's use just black for these. The first one, calcium chloride, is bright. The second one, sodium hydrogen sulfate, Krista says it's dim. Sodium hydroxide is very bright. Sodium phosphate should be, I would expect that to be bright, but she says dim. The copper, I'm trying to keep them in the right order. She says the copper sulfate and the zinc sulfate are both bright. You know what? Hang on a second. I'm was looking to see if I had an answer key for this. That was different because I remember these as being different in what she's showing. The aluminum chloride, I'm going to work backwards just so that it's easier for me to see kind of some of her notes here. The aluminum chloride, she says, is bright. The iron chloride, she says, is bright. The sodium hydrogen carbonate is dim. I would agree with that one. And the sodium carbonate is dim, and I would agree with that one. The one that I have trouble with is the sodium phosphate, because sodium is an always soluble cation. And that one I would assume would be bright. The sodium hydrogen sulfate, I would also assume to be bright because of the presence of the sodium. So I have a couple of questions on those, but I don't think it's going to get into that part in the question. So let's see, we'll deal with the questions in a second. And then this guy here is no light, none. 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 Oops, nope, I take that back. HCl is bright. Yeah, she has a couple of errors on this list. I'm going to amend this list. I'm going to make it the way that I think it should be. So I'm going to change a couple of ones that I know happen to be not correct, because this one definitely dissociates completely because of the sodium ion. The sodium hydrogen phosphate also likewise dissociates completely because of the sodium ion. That's more consistent with what I've told you. The sodium hydrogen carbonate and the sodium carbonate, those actually are dim, believe it or not, and they just don't dissociate. The carbonate is just not super soluble, and they don't dissociate to the same degree that the sodium phosphate does. Bright, bright, none, bright, none, and dim. Okay, I like that better. That looks a little bit better to me. All right, what are the differences between the first group of solutions tested and the second group? And here, the difference is they're asking specifically structural differences. When you look at the differences between these compounds, what you see is that these all have a metal and a non-metal, that these are all ionic compounds. Now look at the group Bs. Group Bs have no metals associated with them. They're all molecular. That's the answer that they're looking for here. You can also go into the differences that we see with the lights, but really what they're looking for are structural differences here for the different types of compounds. That's what you're looking for. And then classify all of the reagents used as strong electrolyte, weak electrolyte, or non-electrolyte by writing the name of the reagent in the appropriate column. That part I can leave you to do, and you can separate them out based on the lights now and looking at them. And the last part, this Hot Wheels car, this part we're going to skip. This part is always, I can describe the experiment to you, but the experiment is a little kind of silly. It's a Hot Wheels car, and it's a fairly big car. And my car is not going to look like a Hot Wheels car. Mine's going to look like an old car. And what this thing has on it is it's got a little container that goes on the back of it that looks like a cylinder that plugs into it. And there's a battery that sits in here, like a 9-volt battery. And what happens is the motor that runs this thing, if we think about this as the motor that runs it, the battery runs over here to the to what they call the fuel cell, and then that runs to the motor. And the fuel cell, what they call the fuel cell, is not what we traditionally think of as a fuel cell in batteries. Generally, when we think of a fuel cell, we think about something that converts hydrogen or converts water into hydrogen and then allows us to use that hydrogen to do some sort of combustion to generate power. Or we think about a fuel cell that converts sunlight into power, like a solar panel or something. Well, what this fuel cell is this is just an ionic solution that is placed in here. A conductive solution. Take the fuel cell off, the battery is not connected to the motor, and nothing runs. Put the fuel cell on it with ionic solution in it, and because the ionic solution conducts electricity, it allows the power to flow from the 9-volt battery to the motor and allows the electrons to actually flow. So really, I've drawn the circuit incorrectly. The circuit should really look like this. The circuit should go to the fuel cell, from the fuel cell to the motor, and from the motor back to the battery to complete the circuit. If you take the fuel cell off, the circuit is broken and the car doesn't run. Put the fuel cell on it with the ionic solution, and then the car zips down the road and the car will actually run. So that's what that experiment was. But that part's a little bit chintzy, and so we skip that part. So really, all you need to do is you need to complete part two and part three in describing those structural differences between group A and group B and sorting them out into strong electrolytes, weak electrolytes, and non-electrolytes. And that's our whole experiment. And we're done early today. All right. Let me check in and see if there was any questions. I'm going to stop the screen share real quick. And if there's no questions, I say we call it a day and we'll get this one posted. All right. Thanks for watching.